There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Hello and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, our daily podcast bringing together the best bits of today's show from Thursday, December the 19th.
The US House of Representatives wrapping up 8 hours of debate on the impeachment of President Donald Trump. Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, unsurprisingly, reckons they did the right thing.
The House has acted on a very sad day to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States, to do so in a manner that was fair, even though the other side was mischaracterizing it. Nonetheless, it was fair.
But at a rally in Michigan, the U.S. President Donald Trump says the decision to impeach him shows the deep hatred and disdain that Democrats have for voters.
What they've done with this perversion, it's perversion. And when you watch some of these people get up and speak today, they don't even listen. Oh, you have violated the Constitution. Well, what has he done wrong? Well, we don't know that. They don't even have any crime.
Well, the job looks safe, though, according to analysts, because the trial will happen in the Republican-controlled Senate. What does it mean for the economy and what does it mean for us here? CNBC's Mad Money host Jim Cramer says that there's no real need even to worry on Wall Street because he says that the market has a few down days ahead, but it's not a big deal.
See, the average has barely budged today. Oh, the Dow did snap that five-day winning streak to close down 28 points. The S&P backslid 0.04%. NASDAQ actually advanced 0.05%. Look, while most of the country is spellbound by the prospect of the House impeaching President Trump, the impact on the market was minimal. Why? Well, in part because we know exactly how the trial in the Senate will go. From an economic perspective, though, there's just not a lot at stake here. The only outstanding issue that really matters to Wall Street is the negotiation of the new NAFTA. But that's looking like a done deal in Congress because Speaker Nancy Pelosi was willing to compromise. The holdup here actually is Mexico, which is rebelling against the notion of U.S. labor law monitors in their country, issues of sovereignty.
Nothing set in stone as yet, but the general consensus is the Senate will start its trial perhaps as early as the second week of January when it returns from its winter recess. That's what Chuck Schumer, love that name, the Democratic Senate Minority Leader has requested, at least in the last 24 hours. And while Republican Senate Leader Mitch McConnell may not like some of his counterparts' other requests for trial procedures, you may be okay with this timeline. You've been sending in your thoughts on this particular subject throughout the course of the morning. Thanks so much indeed to Admiral, who got in touch earlier on today, saying this is describing it as a vicious circle. Said, look at it this way. If the Democrats didn't impeach, Republicans would have claimed that Trump is exonerated. They'd say that anyways, but it gives it more credence to not impeach. And if the Democrats didn't impeach, it sends a terrible signal to Trump and a future president that they can commit impeachable offences like the obstruction of justice and not be punished. And therefore, it was always going to be a given that this impeachment process would at some point kick in, despite the fact that a lot of those bringing the process might not be 100% convinced by it.
Right. Well, we are going to be looking at it this morning on the Business Breakfast, not so much on a political angle, but from an economic and business angle. We are very pleased to be joined on the line now by Bilal Sabuni. Now, it's a voice you may recognise because he was the former CEO, or he is the former CEO, was the CEO of the US Chamber of Commerce office here in Dubai until only just a short while ago. He's currently the Regional Managing Director of GuidePoint for the region. Bilal, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Brandy. Great to be here.
We're looking at this morning, what it means for U.S. business overseas, what it means for business relations with the U.S., investment, confidence, all those big lovely words. How are you looking at this morning's news?
You know, there's not a lot of difference between today and yesterday, to be very frank. I can tell you that, you know, in our work at GuidePoint, we do a lot of forward-looking projections based on political changes. And we really have not seen any inquiries from our clients to discuss the impeachment process in the U.S. Much more so has been a focus, the Brexit has been a focus. but not so much the impeachment process. I think the business community is taking it in stride. They don't feel that there is very much risk whatsoever for an eventual for the president to be removed from office. The impeachment from Congress was not a surprise as well. So I think so long as things continue to go in a manner that is predicted, then the markets will remain kind of relatively stable.
Has everyone already factored this in? Has this gone on for so long with so much rhetoric that any risk is already been considered and maybe discounted?
Yeah, more or less, yes. I mean, there are specific industries that the Trump presidential administration has supported and some industries that have felt his wrath. But again, yes, you are right in the sense that most risk has been factored in. And after analysis, there really doesn't seem to be a lot of consideration for a process that goes off what is considered to be relatively predicted.
Well, look, 4 years ago, Bilal, you and I were at a breakfast. You'd brought with you a red tie and a blue tie so as not to show any partisanship. I had a blue and white dress and some red heels, so we were covering all our bases. And we were at a breakfast full of US business people and friends here in Dubai watching those election results come in live. And I remember when they came in, there was a mini stampede. There was a lot of people with their head in their hands. There were a lot of people who couldn't believe it. And there were a lot of people in a mini stampede onto the balcony who were desperately, who were calling people, not quite screaming, sell, sell, buy, buy, sell, sell, buy, buy. But there were certainly muttered conversations because it was a shock result for a lot of people in that election. We've got quite a time scale to look back on there over the last 3 years or so, but there were all sorts of predictions about what that would do to the US economy, and they haven't come to pass. Do we just absorb this stuff now?
Yeah, there is a sense of numbness to certain ongoing matters within political realm that just drag on for so long. So this impeachment process has not been kind of launched upon us in short course. It's been kind of talked about. It's been ongoing for some time. I don't feel personally that there is much room for a deviation from what is the predicted outcome. The House is, very, very much structured towards the Democratic Party. The Senate is very much structured towards the Republican Party, and both parties are kind of towing the line, and both parties are very strongly either pro or against, it seems. So, unless there is some large-scale mutiny, it doesn't seem that there's any likely outcome that shows Donald Trump being evicted from the White House. And in fact, the Republicans have come out saying that this will make Donald Trump even stronger. So if anything, I mean, I think that the current state of business was kind of reinforced so that, those industries that have thrived under Donald Trump kind of got a boost of confidence that he may, in fact, be reelected and serve another 4 years. Whereas the industries that have felt a little bit weakened under the Trump administration maybe got some bad news that he may be reelected.
Bilal Sabuni, former CEO of the US Chamber of Commerce here in Dubai and the regional managing director currently of GuidePoint across the Middle East and Africa. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
We are joined now on the line by an old friend of the Business Breakfast, having a chat to us about the business and investment implications of the impeachment of US President Donald Trump. Eric Swartz is Senior Executive Officer of Rasmulla Investment Bank. Eric, it's lovely to speak to you again. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, Brandy. It's a pleasure to be here.
With your work hat on, Eric, what do you make of this morning's news?
Well, I think the expectations were, you know, very well telegraphed. There were no surprises in terms of the voting and no surprises in terms of the outcome. As a result of that, I think markets have already factored this impeachment or this step in the impeachment process. And as a result of that, there's little, I would say, market reaction really to come from it.
So what will you now be watching for? Because as you've rightly said, it's a step in a longer process, and we're not entirely 100% sure about what that timeline might look like. So what are the potential headwinds from that?
Well, I think at this point in time, the next step will be for these articles of impeachment to be passed to the Senate. As we all well know, the Senate is controlled by the Republican Party, the party of Donald Trump, and this the senators there are staunch supporters of the president, and therefore it's unlikely that actually the president himself will be impeached on at the Senate as a result of the control that the Republicans have for the party. So the arguments are already well placed, and I think this will actually just drag into the election, and we'll see it play out in the election later this year or later next year.
We've seen certainly on many levels a robust U.S. economy. I'm thinking particularly of employment. What do you put that down to? Obviously, U.S. President Donald Trump is putting that down to his decision-making, but a lot of people have been surprised by how well the U.S. economy has held up. What have you put that down to, and what are your forecasts?
Well, I do put a lot of the U.S. strength down to a couple of initiatives that have been embarked upon successfully by the Trump administration, one of that being the capital gains or the corporate tax reduction, which we had enacted early in his presidency. And the other is the deregulatory activity and the easing of business kind of environment overall for the U.S. And as a result of that, the economy, I think, has done quite well and is still benefiting from these tailwinds. So I would expect the economy to remain strong. You highlighted the strength in the labor market. And to the extent that we start to see some other trade initiatives come to Trump's side, and that's with Mexico and Canada, and that's also with China, that we could begin to see even further strength in the U.S. economy at this point.
Eric Swartz, Senior Executive Officer and Rasmala Investment Bank. Lovely to speak to you again. Thank you so much for your time.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Another question we've been asking is, what does failure mean for an entrepreneur? We pose that to an entrepreneur, Hassan Sheikh, who's co-founder and CEO of Dukor Middle East.
If you haven't failed as an entrepreneur, really, you've got still a lot more learning to do. To fail is really to figure out a way not to do things. I wouldn't look at the logistical side. Anytime you're starting a business, you're looking at projections, something in the future, you're building on hopes and dreams. And there will always be a fear, but I guess the risk profile of entrepreneurs are like, okay, they're prepared to take the risk and they're prepared to look at the downside. So with this new stuff, I assume that the downside will be not so down anymore.
And we got a bit of expert advice as well. Murtaza Manji, managing partner of Kaizen Consulting Group, is a business coach. And we asked him how he helped his clients get past the psychological place of fear.
Before it happens, plan for it. Plan for failure. There's an exercise we do with clients all the time. It's called a business pre-mortem, which is pretty much what it says on the tin, right? Analysis before something actually goes wrong. And the second one is when it's going on and looking at it and saying, what did we not do? If we can identify the inflection points that made that graph start going downwards, we can do something different the next time.
Les Arce, consultant clinical psychologist with ACPN. He's worked extensively in the UK as well as in Dubai and Abu Dhabi. And he also specializes in psychology, informed executive and lifestyle coaching. So he's going to have the answers, that's for sure. It is a warm welcome to Dr. David Lee. David, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me here.
Really kind of you. So let's talk failure, if we can. Fear of failure seems to be the main theme of the show at the moment. From a business point of view, but also, I suppose, on our conversation, confidence personally as well. What impact does failure have on us?
Well, we can learn from failure. That's what we shouldn't forget. So failure is really important. I mean, I'll quote Thomas Edison from many years ago here. I have not failed. I found 10,000 ways that won't work. And he said that when he was inventing the light bulb. Mm. And we need failure. We need a healthy dose of failure in order to develop psychologically, in order to grow, in order to develop what we call our growth mindset. So this idea that, you know, we are a work in progress often. And I mean, that applies to business. It applies to entrepreneurship. If we never fail at anything, we don't learn, we don't grow psychologically, we don't develop, and our confidence, our self-esteem will diminish.
Thomas Edison, I'm assuming, I didn't know him personally, but I'm assuming he didn't need a visa to stay in the country. He didn't need cash to pay for his DEWA bills, etc. He didn't have that sort of pressure around him that many people have here in the UAE. Right. The idea that failure is not only going to have an impact on them professionally, but also personally as well. Is that something Right. that you think that holds people back?
I think so, definitely. I mean, obviously, when we think about our families, we think about our future, our livelihood, you know, we have to take these things very, very seriously. It's not just about the failure of the business itself, of course. And, you know, due diligence, as has already been mentioned earlier by Hassan, very, very important. We need to do due diligence if we're going to set up a business, if we're going to flourish in business.
Mm. Can you ever make failure your friend? I mean, we're looking at it from a business point of view, but is that something that can be taught to an individual?
Absolutely, yeah. We need to embrace failure. And I mean, I know that sounds counterintuitive that we should set out to fail, but small failures along the way so that we can actually correct our mistakes, so that we can reflect on what went wrong, so that we can build resilience, really, you know, our emotional muscle fiber, if you like, you know, is really, really important. So, yeah, you can make failure your friend. Of course, you want to avoid big failures. You don't want to take, you know, uncalculated risks, if you like, or, you know, reckless failure. We need to be very, very careful. But failure is something that you can embrace and grow from.
Do you think it's something that's instilled in us from a young age as well? Because I was saying to Brandy earlier, you know, if any of us got an F on any of our essays at school or in any of our exams we sat, we would have been told by our teachers and maybe our parents as well, you failed. So you know from a young age that that's bad.
Well, you hadn't you? you know, and yeah, I mean, we shouldn't set out to fail. Don't get me wrong here, but we should be able to learn from failure. We shouldn't turn away from it. You know, we talk about, you know, and the idea of leaning into the risk, you know, so not to kind of pull away from risk, but actually to lean into it so that we can learn from it. That's not about kind of recklessly heading into the unknown so that we're going to fail. It's about embracing failure when it happens, being able to reflect on that and build from there. And that's all about the idea of growth mindset is the idea that we're a work in progress, that we're trying to develop. We may not be there yet, but we're working towards something. You know, we're not the finished article. That's always the case with any startup.
Mm. So what can people do if you have grown up, you know, scared of getting stuff wrong? What, I feel bad asking for easy hacks, but I'm asking for easy hacks. What can you practically do in your own life to try and change the way you view the world?
Well, it's about overcoming that needless risk adversity, isn't it? I mean, some risk adversity is good. You know, I've already mentioned due diligence. We have to do that when we're talking about entrepreneurship. But we have to be prepared to make the leap. Otherwise, we stay in the starting blocks. One of the things I highly recommend to many people is coaching, you know, coaching around business, entrepreneurship coaching, psychologically informed coaching, which can help us to develop this growth mindset that I'm talking about so that we're better able to deal with failure and, you know, take those necessary risks, I guess.
That was Dr. David Lee, clinical psychologist at the American Center for Psychiatry and Neurology here in Dubai.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Size Business Breakfast.
We're getting ready to celebrate a birthday. Dubai Duty Free celebrating 36 years tomorrow. We are very pleased to be joined in the studio by Cole McLaughlin, who is the Executive Vice Chairman and the CEO of Dubai Duty Free.
Happy to be here.
Mabruk, congratulations on 36 years. How will you be celebrating?
Well, we'll be reflecting a lot on the past 36 years, of course, and we'll be repeating the story that we've done many times, that we came here for 6 months in 1983 and extended that for 2 years, and now we're in year 36. And we have used the last number of days in recognizing our staff. We have been to the new airport and cut a cake there, a celebratory cake. We have been to some of our concourses at the airport. We've been to our border shop at Hatta. We've been to our Irish village in the parks and resorts. We have honoured people who've done long service with the company. And yesterday, for example, we had a certificate giving for people who've done 35 years. We have 6 more people who've done 35 years with us. We had 26 people yesterday who've done 30 years with us. And we had 25 people who completed 25 years. And we honoured each of them. We were joined yesterday by an ambassador we have in the WTA tennis tour, Miss Simone Halep, who is the current Wimbledon champion. And today we're going to Concourse B and we're repeating those sort of things. Today we're going to draw a $1 million prize. We're going to draw some luxury cars today. And then this evening we have a dinner at our own hotel, the Jumeirah Creekside Hotel, for our what we call our dream team, which is our 10 senior people in the duty free.
What's the secret, Colm, to keeping people in a company for 30, 25, 20 years?
I think recognising them correctly is important. I think looking after them as well as you can and treating them correctly. In our case, we have 48% of our staff are female, 52% are male. There's equal opportunity for everybody. We have within our senior management team 5 senior vice presidents, and 3 of them are ladies, Brandy. You might be interested to know. But respecting them and giving them credit where they deserve it. Dubai Duty Free, during its 36 years, have won 700 different awards around the world. And repeatedly, we attribute those records to the efforts of our staff. And we introduced 19 years ago a system in Dubai Duty Free of internal promotion. So we have not recruited a senior person from outside in 19 years. And except for a few oldies like ourselves, all our supervisors, senior supervisors, management, they're all staff who have come through the ranks and been promoted, and it works very well for us. Our staff turnover last year, and indeed the previous number of years, has been less than 6% each year.
Colm, can I ask a question about sort of trends in duty-free at the moment? We've been reading reports throughout the week, and we've had people in the studio talking about trying to get people through airports quicker than ever before. Smart technology coming in, efficient movement as well. Seems to me that sort of clashes a bit with trying to get them to spend a bit of time in Dubai duty-free as well. Is that one of the challenges that you think you might face moving forward at the moment? Is that something you're thinking about?
I think it's important for duty-free operators that people have time within the duty-free area. And the introduction of new technology at Dubai Airport has helped us a lot in that, because now many people, just particularly residents in Dubai who are travelling out, they just walk through the cameras and they're there. Mm. So we have found that there's more time available for the passengers to browse through our duty-free. And then, of course, it's our job to do the best we can in trying to sell them something. And thankfully, that's going very well this year also.
Yeah. I have warned Colm about your conspiracy theory that him and Paul Griffiths are in cahoots to get everyone there 6 hours early during the Christmas rush.
Well, he won't do what I'm asking him to tell people to come 6 hours before their flight. But, you know, we cooperate very much together. We have the same chairman, His Highness Sheikh Ahmed, who is a superstar in everything he does and is very supportive to us at Dubai Duty Free and indeed to everything at the airport.
And one of the trends we've seen throughout the year here in other industries is delivery. You know, people are getting things delivered left, right and centre at the moment. Again, with the pre-ordering services that you've mandated within Dubai Duty Free, has that been popular amongst customers?
Yes, we introduced it 3 years ago. We had a system where we just simply called it click and collect, like so many other people in the world. But when we first introduced it, people did not pay for what they purchased at that time. they were to collect it later and pay, and a number of them did not come and collect it.
Ah.
So we changed that. We have 15,000 items online ready for sale. People buy, they purchase, they pay, and then they come and collect. We haven't been able to work out if it's additional business or instead of business.
Mm.
We will do about $25 million on that service this year. And it's working well for us, and it's a convenience for passengers.
Yeah.
But more important for us is that people have longer with us to browse and deliberate on what they want to purchase.
Oh, you know, if Malcolm was here, he'd be asking you about the numbers for 2019. So I'm going to do it instead.
Yeah, we miss Malcolm, of course. And as you all know, he's been here a long, long time. And I have been chatting to Malcolm on many occasions. Our numbers are very good this year. We're very happy. There are two things that are talked about a lot in the duty-free industry. One is penetration, and the other is sale per head. And we have managed this year to sell to more people than previously. And if you look at good airports like Heathrow, Singapore, if they sell something to between 18 and 20% of departing passengers, they're very, very happy. In our case, we sell something to in excess of 40% of departing passengers. And the other thing that's talked about is the sale per head. Again, we're one of the top people in the world, the value of each purchase. And our sale per passenger is about $38 per person. Our numbers this year are very good. We're up on last year. We're up on our budget. And that is despite the fact that the traffic is slightly down this year. There was a 40-day closure of one of the runways, and the passengers are about 2 million less than last year. But our sales are 44 million up on last year, 44 million dirhams, not dollars. And we're very, very happy with that. We're going to end the year with our best every year. We're once again going to reach that magical target of crossing $2 billion at the end of the month. We have a discount going these 3 days.
Which I wanted to ask you about. You always have your anniversary sales. Tell us very quickly, Colm, what people travelling now will see.
We have a 25% discount on various products. There are some exceptions, of course. And our average sale on a good day in Dubai Duty Free is we take sales of 20, 21, 22 million dirhams per day. Up to 10 o'clock last night, yesterday's sales were 51 million dirhams.
Wow.
And we expect in excess of 60 or 70 million today. And tomorrow being the big anniversary day, we're going to break 100 million dirham sales in one day. We're going to finish the year at 7.4 billion dirhams. And we're going to have sold 72 million pieces of merchandise.
And on the 36th anniversary, polo tops available in the merchandise shop as well?
Everything with 36 years, like the shirt I'm wearing.
Sign me up for one, click and go.
We have 6,100 staff who are working very, very hard. And we give all the credit for the success of Dubai Duty Free to them.
Colm McLaughlin, a gentleman, as always, Executive Vice Chairman and CEO of Dubai Duty Free. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here, Brandy. Colm, thank you very much.
Those travelling through the airport tomorrow will no doubt have a fantastic day on their anniversary day, and with those anniversary sales as well. Thanks for listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. We're back Sunday morning at 6.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.